So this week's sermon, the title is called People of Church Live Off of the Fruit of Faith. And we're going to be covering Joshua chapters 6 through 8. So from last week, we started looking at the book of Joshua, the continuation from the five books of Moses. Structure-wise, in terms of the Old Testament, we must look first at the overall historical sequence of the book, then we must look at it in individual books. However, since Joshua is really a continuation of the books of Moses, we're going to first look at the book of Joshua itself, then look at the overall history. So after observing the first book of Moses, we can summarize that the purpose of them is to make the Israelites make aware of their identity through years of history. After being committed to the covenant at Mount Sinai, they were able to form a relationship with God and had the time to think about their own identity and was made sure that what they needed to do once they arrived in the Promised Land. On the other hand, from Joshua, we can see that it is the actual start of these Israelites applying these things in their lives. So last week, we talked about how important it is to be aware of where our spiritual journey is currently at. Salvation has started from God's grace, and after that, people were able to properly understand their own identity and correct understanding of God by coming before Him in the Mount of Sinai. Then finally, they were able to come live in the land of Canaan, which is a promised land, where they can live as the chief priest in the Holy Land. So in our current lives, we never really reflect back on the history of the journey of the Israelites. We take things for granted and act like as we have been born and started from the land of Canaan. This is very similar to the current story of Korea. After the Korean War, the North and the South are still technically in a war, and you just have no idea when the war might break out again. There was never a truth, or there was never a peace, technically speaking. However, nobody really thinks of that as a realistic problem in Korea because they're just indifferent about it, and many of the young generation didn't actually go through the war and rather just learned about it from the textbook. However, the government itself, the Korean government itself, is aware of the fact that the war can possibly break out at any time, and therefore there is still a mandatory military service. So the training these soldiers is actually really, really essential for the nation of Korea. So I gave you this analogy because this is very similar to how we look at the generation of the Israelites, of what happened to Israelites. They had to go through so many obstacles and so many wars in order to actually come into the land of the Promised Land. And we just have to be mindful of that. So similarly, we as Christians must have a sense of awareness of our spiritual condition or situation. The land where we belong is not this earth, it's not this world, but we belong in the kingdom of heaven, right? So therefore, until we meet God up in the heaven, we have the duty to live as chief priest in this world. The kingdom of heaven cannot be entered immediately right after our salvation, but rather it's a long journey through Mount Sinai where we can truly become true Christians. So in not just in the country where you're living right now or the city that you're living right now, even in your workplace, your relationship with your friends, your relationship with your coworkers, and the type of business that you're doing, it's not the kingdom of heaven, but we have the identity of like the chief priest-like character, of like chief priest traits, so that with those traits, with those identities, we're able to live in this world, and we must act like one. in our individual sectors. So it is important to have this viewpoint, because without knowing this, we can be mistaken by thinking that the land of Canaan is some kind of oasis or utopia and start treating it as if this is heaven. Rather, it is supposed to be the place where we can apply the things that we have picked up along the journey. And however, if we do see it as some kind of heavenly place, then our purpose suddenly changes, and what we desire for can dramatically be different from God's purpose and His desire. If we have the perspective of seeing our current world as the land of Canaan, which is like a heavenly place, and that the war has been over already, then it is almost certain that we will not care about God's purpose and God's mission for us in this world. We will only think of ourselves and our well-being and our pleasure. So that's like the broad picture of what we're going to be covering today. And it might not make sense entirely at the moment, but just keep in mind that what we are trying to say here is this world is not the heaven, and this, even though these Israelites have entered into the land of Canaan, that's not the end story. That doesn't mean anything. You can't just treat that, even though it's a promised land, you can't treat that as a heavenly place. So until we go up to the heaven, we cannot be lazy. We cannot just say that, oh God, it seems like we have plenty of Christians in this world, or it seems like I'm living a godly life at the moment, so I'm just going to stop trying. Same story for these Israelites who have entered into the land of Canaan finally. They're not done. There's still work to do. And God wanted us to become unified as His people. So He saved us from Egypt and led us to the Mount Sinai. The purpose of Him doing this was so that we can differentiate ourselves from the world, to live a differentiated life, to live a different life, the holy life. However, what we must remember is that the land of Canaan was a promised land, but at the same time, it was judged as the land full of temptation and sins. Therefore, we must remember that the land of Canaan is virtually everywhere, and as long as we live according to God's commands, then the land that we are currently living can also be the promised land. So in sum, the promised land is where people know God's covenant and where they are trying to live according to the covenant made with God. That's the main point here. In that sense, it is difficult to see that the promised land was land abundant with food and where public peace was upheld. We can see that the main city of Canaan, Jerusalem, was not always all that peaceful. Every time people have defied God and has wronged God, the city fell apart. It was destroyed many times. And this historical site is still dealing with war and violence. And even geographically wise, and even the terrain conditions, it's just like, it's covering desert. Like, the most ideal place for Land of Canaan or the Promised Land would be like Melbourne, but it's nothing like Melbourne. And it is when we lose our true purpose of living and calling, or God's mission, is when we lose the blessing that God has granted to Abraham's descendants and start to be scattered around the world to be the slaves, or to become slaves. Thus, the promised land can be portrayed as a land where we can remember the covenant that we have made with God and where we can live according to His words. It is essentially the land of calling. So, in the midst of the modern era, people who have been saved by His grace and people who have been called to new mission or calling must all come before God and try our best to uphold their missions and callings. And we do this by having a proper understanding of the words, of which we can know our identity. So, us, the members of MCC, can live a genuine Christian life by knowing our identities and knowing what we need to do in our individual sectors so that we can truly be holy people of God. To sum things up, in order to occupy the Promised Land, it is imperative to understand the purpose and our end goal to this fight, rather than knowing how to fight. So now, Joshua will lead the people to this long war, which lasts for 7 years. And the only reason why they were able to win the war was by having this consciousness of God's calling and God's mission. Even after the war, if we truly want to live as chief priests in this world, then we must have this consciousness. So last week's sermon in chapters 1 through 5, we're able to clearly see that the Israelites were being reminded of the promise and covenant made with God, and was planted with the heart to obey to those command, to those God's commands and God's commandments. And they weren't just merely saying this, but rather they showed it through their actions. With the faithful heart, they sent out the spies, and with faith, they crossed the Jordan River. They also exercised circumcision during the war and upheld the remembrance of the Passover. So with all these valuable actions, they did their best to be reminded of the heart that they needed to have. So after repeating to them all of these things that the previous generations have went through, they finally get themselves involved in this war. The first castle that they have encountered was the castle of Jericho. If you look at the map, the base camp of Israelites were very, very close to the castle. And nevertheless, God has asked the Israelites to perform circumcision when their enemy was right behind them or right next to them. And here we can see the level of faith that the men had on God, because without such faith, no foolish man will do such thing. The castle of Jericho wasn't big and fancy, but it was well fortified. The castle was covered with deep pit and gutter, so the only way to really take over the wall was through sieging. Just a very traditional sieging technique, which is very difficult battle to win in. But the technique that the Israelites used was something very unorthodox and something unheard of. For the 7 days, God has instructed his men to walk around the wall in silence. Then when the signal strikes, they were to scream. It sounds very silly. So you see what God is doing here? He again is testing their faith. Not only testing, but letting them know that the only way that they can win is their faith that they have for God. God will only let them win by having obedience through him. What's more amazing is that these people continue to act faithfully without questioning God's commands. Sometimes the things stated in the Bible doesn't make sense. The miracles that we read from the words don't make sense at all. However, what's really being portrayed here is that God really wants to show to us that there is nothing powerful and greater than the faith that we have for him. So let us be reminded today that we are the people who live faithfully according to his words. So this technique of walking around the wall in silence doesn't seem too difficult, right? I mean, all they had to do was just walk around and scream when the signal was given to them. No big deal. And you're not really fighting the enemy here, per se. And think about all the mockery thrown at them from the enemy because they look silly. Imagine those soldiers who's defending the wall of Jericho, and they're just looking at these, like, Israelites. Just walking around the wall for 7 days, and that to them probably looked really silly, and probably they mocked the Israelites. However, this battle was really a battle within themselves, within the Israelites themselves, rather than the battle with the enemy. It was a matter of whether you're being faithful or not. That's exactly it. So what's the result here? chapter 6, verse 27 states that the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame spread throughout the land. So think about this for a second. These people just won the battle and crushed the castle of Jericho without losing any of their men. The rest of Canaan was more frightened than ever. The bottom line is that when we fight a faithful battle, God will do greater things and he will deliver greater results. He will open up the doors for our victory. So after witnessing what the faith can deliver them, they had confidence in their results. Unfortunately, even with everything going in the right direction for them, they lose the next battle. The next battle, as it has been talked about in chapter 7, it was against the castle of Ai. Well, not Ai, I would just call it Ai. This castle was relatively easier to conquer than the castle of Jericho because it was a lot smaller. And the spies came back to report that only 2,000 to 3,000 men were required to take over the castle. However, they still lost. So why did this happen? So far, we have seen that the battles that the Israelites are facing is not really about any other normal war. It is really the battle of faith. It is to test their faith for God and their obedience for God. So since they lost against the castle of Ai, we're able to see what went wrong with their faith and obedience and learn from it. So after the Israelites failed to take over the castle, verse 5 states that the heart of the people melted and became like water. They fell into a deep confusion after this event because they seemed to be thinking that they were doing everything right, being faithful and all that. So in their minds, they're thinking, we have already won one battle and we did this by being obedient to God. So after they fell, the next time, it became a big dilemma for them when they eventually failed to conquer even a smaller castle. And some people think that they lost. I mean, there are a lot of interpretations to this, but some people would think that because they were being boastful and arrogant after the battle won at the castle of Jericho, and that they disregarded God's commands and acted on their own thinking. However, if we look at the context closely, we're able to see that being arrogant and boastful are not the only reasons why you lose a battle. It's not just the fact that they were not being faithful to God has brought about this failure. What actually had happened was that God wanted his people to fight a war that clearly differentiated themselves from the world. We're able to actually see that one group of family has actually led to this result. So you probably heard this phrase before. It doesn't matter how you get there. All that is important is the fact that you got there. But that's not how it works with God. God's ways is not just to have the right end goal and the right purpose. What's really important is the process to get to that end point. He cares about the process as well. We learn so much and we grow so much spiritually throughout the faithful journey. We can really learn how to differentiate ourselves while going through that hard process. So we can't just have good intentions, but rather the process itself is important as well. This is precisely the reason why sometimes we may look like failures in the eyes of non-Christians. It's not a rocket science to figure out that we tend to put ourselves in worse situations or unfair situations in this modern time. I mean, coming to church on Sundays, people will be like, you could be making more money on Sundays by opening up the shop. Other students could be saying, you could study on Sunday to get yourself in a better position to get a better grade. But just look at Jesus for an example, right? He lived the most perfect Christian life that any person could ever live. And yet, he was still crucified on the cross. So for us Christians, it is not the result or the end point, but it's really about the process of how you get there closer to God. It's the process that we really need to to have our eyes on. So what happened was, while everyone else was trying to fight the righteous battle, there was one person who was being selfish. He tried to walk on the unrighteous path. So the failure to take over the castle of Ai was not because of boastfulness or lack of prayer by the Israelites as a whole, but rather it was the unfaithful behavior of the guy named Achan. In the midst of the dangerous battle, all he cared about was stealing expensive clothes and treasures of gold and silver. He hid those things in his tent where his family resided. So we're not sure whether his entire family took part in this crime in the beginning, but it is certain that Achan started it. I mean, this Achan guy was really, really foolish. Even after the loss, he could have come forth with his lies and unfaithful actions. However, he waited and tried to avoid it all the way till the end, when they finally called him out. He couldn't let go of those earthly values and desires. We're humans and we're all sinners. We all know that. So there may be times when we will be tempted to do those foolish things. However, it would have been good for him to repent and ask for forgiveness. Unfortunately, his actions has caused him and his family members to be stoned to death. God clearly shows to us what can happen when we try to deviate from his plan and process. So the important message here is that our individual actions can affect the entire community. One person can actually lead to a great failure for the entire church. You might be thinking that, well, I can just be that one naughty person at church because everyone else seems to be doing their jobs right. However, you need to realize that your immature thinking can actually bring a great tragedy upon your brothers and sisters. So God realizes the importance of each individual's faith as well as the entire community's. Just take an alcoholic father, for example, right? Think about the kinds of damages he does to his family and to his society. Also, think about the drunk drivers, how their foolish action can break so many of the family's lives. And even with your spouse, each other's arrogance can result in bad influence to your children. And you cannot treat this as some God's curse. This is rather an evidence showing that God made us all independent with free wills. God is not controlling our lives. Humans can enjoy their freedom, which has been granted by the God himself, so that we can have one-to-one relationship with him. So what comes with the freedom? You need to be responsible for your actions, and you know you have to behave because everyone would be judged by God at some point. So even in our church today, don't think that your action means nothing for the church as a whole. It will be a shame for the entire church and the community to suffer because of one person's selfish actions. So just be mindful of the consequences that your action can bring upon others. So as evidenced from chapter 7, they're not going over the reasons why they have failed to take over the castle of Ai. Rather, they're assessing whether they have been faithful to God or not. So when we face failures in our lives, it is not solely dependent upon the environment or the intensiveness of the opponent or the circumstance. Rather, it lies with our own actions. And many times, even though we read and come to church, we always have some kind of excuse to go along with our failures and hardships that we face in our lives. But what we really need to understand is the fact that our failure results from our own actions and behaviors. We have the choice to be successful or not. So it is really important for us to not to be lazy and be always faithful to God. And remember that we have the choice to change our failures to success. It solely depends on our behavior. And you might be saying, yes, we kind of know all that, but we just can't overcome our laziness. But remember, our faith can overcome our laziness. Without faith, we cannot do anything, and that has been made clear to us from the very start of the Bible, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In order to win our daily battles against the evil spirits, we shouldn't be looking at who our opponent is, but rather, we need to see whether our faith is, where our faith is, and whether our faith is in the right place, and whether our behavior is mature enough to perform such actions. So what is sin? Sin is anything that is against the will of God. So another reason for us to be faithful all the time. So this is another reason for us to be faithful all the time, because anytime we're not being faithful can actually transfer into sins. The holy life is dependent upon our willingness to put God's words and values as our standards. And this value and God's values don't depend on earthly and worldly values. And God is asking each one of us to be faithful to His covenant that He had made with His people thousands of years ago, and not to compromise those values with this world. So after washing their sins again, God allows them to continue the war in chapter 8. So this applies in the church as well. After we mess up on something, it's wrong for us to just continue to move forward. We need to step back and think about what we need to do, in terms of things that we need to fix before moving on. So it is really important for us to recover our sinful nature as soon as possible before doing anything further. So in verse 17, it says, "Not a man remained in Ai or Bethel who did not go after Israel. They left the city open and went into pursuit of Israel. After Joshua and his men fought bravely and won as they have followed precisely to God's words." So the bottom line is that the bad or the good result lies within the process of how you went about it. Because our lives are differentiated from the other lives, the result in our wars don't depend upon the orthodox or traditional means, but rather we're able to defeat the undefeatable Goliath and destroy the strong castle of Jericho because of our faith for God. In verse 30, the covenant is renewed at Mount Sinai. Or not Mount Sinai, Mount Ebal. Joshua built on Mount Ebal an altar to the Lord, the God of Israel. And afterward, Joshua reads all the words of the law, the blessings and the curses, just as it is written in the book of law that Moses wrote. There was not a word of all that Moses had commanded that Joshua did not read to the whole assembly of Israel, including the women and children and the aliens who lived among them. Joshua did this because he knew that this was the only way to live a blessed life. So whatever disastrous hardships strike us in our lives, we will not give up, because our faith and obedience to God will ultimately be appreciated by the great God Himself. So whenever failures repeat in our lives, let's take a step back to reflect on what we can do to improve that. Let's assess whether we are standing on the Word of God and whether our behavior and standards and values are in the right place. We spend our time looking for answers, but oftentimes the answer is the very fact that we're walking on the wrongful path of the God. So the path of obedience and faithfulness is the best possible path for us. So in order to stay on this path, we need to stand firm in the words of God. When the Satan throws some kind of enticing bait at us, we need to have the discerning eyes to see that that's actually a trap. And don't be mistaken of the things that are happening at your life. Even though you might be enjoying success, that might not always be success in the eyes of the Lord. It is when we are being successful that Satan hits us harder. He gives us the thoughts of being arrogant and boastful against God. Success can actually make us unsuccessful. And this is what happened to the Israelites again after they have taken over Kasabai. So we'll pick up at this point in next week's sermon. And let us pray now.